Hello and welcome to the latest Bruin podcast, and welcome back for those returning from their summer breaks. The questions we're going to be dealing with in this podcast is, how is the global economy doing? Is it still growing? Will the US-China trade war kill the recovery? Can Turkey bring down the emerging market asset class? And is a hard Brexit now the most likely outcome? To hear the responses from our head of research, please keep listening. But first, here are our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. Any tax allowances or thresholds mentioned are based on personal circumstances and current legislation which may change. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Bruin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Bruin podcast. I'm Ben Gutteridge, Head of Fund Research. Today we've decided to give you a review of the summer and how each of the major stories are influencing markets and our investments, how they're influencing our investment thoughts into the year end. The three stories I think we're going to focus on are trade, Brexit and Turkey. And to guide us through each of these issues, we're delighted to welcome back, fresh from his own Swedish vacation, our Head of Research, Guy Foster. What I wanted to do was to discuss those three issues. But before we do that, I know you've been scrambling since you got back to get yourself up to speed with markets. You know, what have you learnt in that whirlwind tour of reviewing investment commentary and news and data? You know, how would you describe the summer months in terms of market performance and the news flow?
Well, markets have been pretty quiet, really. I mean, they've obviously gone up and down a bit, and like where we are compared to where we were at the beginning of August, the US has had a pretty decent return, and most other markets haven't done a great deal. Some of them are a bit lower, some a bit stronger. And from a sterling perspective, pound's generally a bit weaker, so but not loads, but it's generally a bit weaker. So that's kind of helped the overseas markets for a UK investor.
Okay, so let's get on to sterling weakness there. The natural conclusion is that political risk has been on the rise and weighed on sterling. Is that the vast majority of the explanation, or has there been weakness in the data? What is the Bank of England governor saying? You know, how would you, what would you put, where would you lay the blame for that sterling weakness?
Oh, I think it is political in this instance. I mean, where we were not many months ago, really pre-checkers, was that I think the overwhelming narrative in the market was that the UK was heading towards a soft Brexit. And that's probably still what people broadly believe. But they're certainly upping the chances of a hard Brexit. I mean, some of this, I think, is sort of positioning, expecting a change in narrative, not necessarily expecting an actual change in outcome. But as we approach the rapidly moving, as we approach the deadline for the culmination of these talks, which is itself seemingly moving slightly away from us, we know or we expect that there is going to be some tough talking on both sides, because it's a negotiation between the EU and the UK, and in a negotiation you always have to look as if you're prepared to walk away. And the UK's problem, I think the thing that has frustrated many people about the UK's stance so far during the Article 50 period is that it hasn't really given itself a great deal of opportunity to walk away. So that's why a few months ago everybody was thinking, well, okay, it's soft Brexit because we haven't made the preparations for a hard Brexit. Now, whether they're prepared to go through with it or not, the government, one would expect, is very likely to give the impression that it is prepared to suffer a hard Brexit if it doesn't get the deal it wants. And Europe is probably is equally incentivized to give the impression that it's prepared to allow the UK to suffer a hard Brexit if it doesn't get to abide by its lines in the sand.
So following that path through at least to the deadline that is around year end, the UK government will continue to stand by its willingness, although it's not its preference, to walk away. And if the EU isn't giving any concessions, which there isn't any obvious signs of, then that continues to weigh on sterling, or is it sort of, you know, around cheap enough?
It is a bit cheap at the moment, but positioning isn't as negative as it could be, and so I think that's why people are imagining that, even though they may not believe this stance, they can imagine that it can weigh on the pound a bit more as you start approaching that deadline. Now, I think comparing this to, say, before the referendum, you didn't know that there was no sort of prevailing narrative. Sometimes the polls looked, you know, seemed to be one way. Sometimes they seemed to be the other way. And so there was some uncertainty in the market. But then the news flow would ebb and flow. Whereas in this instance, the news flow you're expecting to be very negative. Now, from an investor's perspective, what you want to be able to do is take advantage of that. So buy when the news flow is very, very weak. But I think it's going to be very difficult to do that in advance of a deal being announced, because the risk is so binary. You know, if a deal doesn't get announced, then you're not really going to get that benefit of a rebound. You're going to get just more pain. So I think it's quite difficult for people to take a contrarian stance on this until after, in the worst case scenario, until after it's announced that there isn't going to be a deal, then you would see a sharp sell-off, and then it would be a case of identifying whether that provides an opportunity or not.
Okay, so the other two issues I raised broadly were that surrounding trade and Turkey. I think Turkey's a frustration to us personally, because I know you started talking about Turkey very early in August, before I saw it more widely in the press, of some concerns you were having about how that economy was sort of managing itself and unfolding, and the drama that was sort of being played out. And then as you jetted off to Sweden, so this absolutely spiraled, and the lira sort of plunged. I mean, just remind us why. I think people will be fairly on top of the Turkish story, but just remind us why it sort of spiraled so quickly. And is it a story that has still concerning you? And is it, impacting your emerging markets for you?
Where you could trace this back to is how long is a piece of string, really. Turkey has for a long time had a fragility about it, which is slightly different to most emerging markets. I mean, it is a classic sort of twin deficit market. Mostly the fact that it has a big current account deficit is the challenge that it has. So that's its economic problem in a nutshell. There's a lot more detail there. And then politically and geopolitically, it seems to have managed to compound that particular problem. You know, on the political front, the domestic politics is that President Erdogan wants to, it has been becoming increasingly autocratic over recent years, and this year has finally managed to place himself in overall control, or as an effective president of Turkey. And he fought off this coup in 2016 that everyone will remember, and managed to use the coup as an excuse to become significantly more kind of draconian in his approach. So that sort of made people a bit wary about Turkey. And then it's been impacted by the same kinds of tariffs that the rest of the world has suffered as a result of the new president in the US. and then on things like aluminium and steel, that is. And then it related to the coup, I mean, everyone will be aware of the headlines, but there is a dispute with the US over this particular pastor who was is accused of having been involved in the coup, and the US wants to see him returned, and Turkey doesn't want to return him. And so on that basis, the US has started imposing imposing sanctions on Turkey, and it is threatening restricting lending to Turkey, which would be a major problem because, to take it back to the original economic fragility, Turkey is heavily, heavily reliant upon funding from overseas economies. So that's the sort of general background.
Okay, and Turkey, I think, had long been discussed as having this challenge of current account deficits, and yet seemed to move reasonably well during EM recovery. I guess these challenges sort of confluence together when you have a bit of dollar strength, and that's certainly what we've had. So does this...
Well, I mean, what happened... there's so many sort of factors underpinning Turkey's weakness at the moment that that's one of the challenges. But particularly what happened was that inflation started to pick up in 2017. And so, Turkish Central Bank was slow to take effect of that. So you had a year of quite sharply negative interest rates at a time. Real interest rates, sorry. Yes, thank you for that. At a time when inflation was starting to pick up. And then even though rates have been more than doubled earlier this year, there's bit that the investment community still feels like the central bank is firmly on the back foot and that it needs to be getting ahead of this. It's got 2% positive real interest rates now, but it probably needs to be something more in the sort of 4 or 5 percent kind of range at the moment. And then at the end of July, the thing that really spooked them is there was a very strong expectation that rates would be hiked, and rates weren't hiked. And it's since then, really, that we've started to see the lira in freefall.
Okay, well, having undone my suggestion that it was related to dollar strength, you know, that still doesn't...
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, it is, yes, absolutely. I mean, that's... another problem that that Turkey has is very high external debt. So not so much government debt. It's got about 28% debt to GDP, but it's got huge external debt. And a large share of that is a bit more than about 2/3 of it is dollar denominated.
Okay, thanks, Guy. So to confirm then, the dollar is certainly an issue for Turkey and broader emerging markets. And so here we are with a stronger dollar environment, but now this sort of acute issue in Turkey that rumbles on. Is there a significant risk of contagion for the rest of emerging markets?
Well, I mean, the obvious thing, having talked about external debt, is that there will be some creditors who've made these loans. And so if there's going to be any kind of restructuring or anything like that, most of this is kind of private sector debt rather than necessarily public sector debt. So chances of a default, as the currency falls, it places more pressure on Turkish corporates. They can't maintain their margins. They might suffer some losses. Maybe they default on some bonds. Turkish banks might suffer some losses. Might start to be short of capital. So that's why you have to kind of do something to address this. Whilst a lot of the debt is dollar denominated, most of the creditors are European focused, and so that's why there's quite a lot of focus being put on European banks. Is it a systemic problem for European banks? Doesn't appear to be so. European banks had to reveal at the beginning of 2017 how much Turkish exposure they had to the European banking regulator, and also the BIS comprised some statistics on this. There's particular concentration in Spain and France to a lesser extent. Italy, and there are about four individual banks that have quite meaningful exposure through subsidiaries or stakes in subsidiaries that they've got. But overall, Turkish assets make up about 1%, a bit less than 1% of the credit assets of European banks. So it doesn't look like it should be a systemic problem.
Okay. Now, to avoid the ongoing risk of a systemic problem, it would be nice for Turkey to get itself in order. So, you know, what needs to happen, do you think? What decisions can Turkey make to avert this this ongoing crisis?
So there's a few different things they need to do. We talked about raising interest rates, positive real interest rates, making them a bit more positive would be important. Normally, you would expect an emerging market to have to express some sort of fiscal discipline. The budget deficit isn't a massive problem for Turkey at the moment, but and certainly there have been instances in the past where you try and consolidate your fiscal position and end up hurting growth too much. So maybe some kind of sort of fiscal rule might be useful. And then a lot of what China gets up to, really, the kind of macroprudential measures. So something like hiking the reserve ratio requirement would be helpful, and possibly the deposits to loans ratio, or to just sort of shore up the banking system. Those would be things that would encourage make investors feel a bit more positive about Turkey. But what is important to understand is that in all of these instances, in an emerging market sudden stop type event, the problem is all of the measures that you do will be damaging to growth to some extent, and that's partly that's the point, and partly that's just the way that they work. So it's definitely and that's typically why they haven't been done so far, is because
you don't really form part of a populist agenda, do they?
Then, yeah, exactly. They're not very popular, but you get to the stage where you have to take some unpopular measures. Alternatively, or maybe in combination, you'd be looking for some sort of bailout, and that's typically where these things end. A loan from the IMF, but given where Turkey is geopolitically, it might be the IMF. It might struggle to appeal to the IMF, but it might look to its new allies, Russia, or allies seeking a sort of bigger place in the world, people like China.
Okay, well, we'll certainly keep a close eye on how that story unfolds. And I particularly think it'll be fascinating if China is somehow involved in this funding for Turkey and the stipulations that will come with that. But anyway, let's move on to how emerging markets might be impacted by this Turkish issue. I mean, there has to be a chance that Turkey doesn't take the steps required to get its house in order. And therefore, could it be the case that that it sort of brings down the emerging market asset class at large?
Well, there's definitely a chance of that. I mean, the sheer size of it, Turkey's got considerably more external debt than, say, Russia had, even adjusting for inflation at a time when we had, say, the Russian default and the Asian crisis in the late 90s. So that was a very big, significant impact. Now, could it be enough in this instance? It does entirely depend, really, on how severe it gets. There's talk about capital controls, which would be the final stage of what you can do to combat a currency crisis of the type that Turkey's facing. And whilst that in itself is a whole different spectrum of measures, generally I think assumed that would be a pretty significant and damaging impact on Turkey, and it would probably have severe consequences in terms of the capital it could attract in the future, and therefore it would mean that a lot of irrecoverable loans that have been made by the developed world now could continue to turn bad, and that in itself has has implications for sentiment towards the emerging markets. There's also, of course, the direct trade route, which is that Turkey's a big trading partner of places like Czech Republic, Poland, Romania, Bulgaria. So those will probably also, well, almost certainly experience some weakness from a very severe economic collapse on the part of Turkey. But once you get broader than that, it's not obvious how it would have a direct economic impact on sort of Southeast Asia or indeed on Latin America. So perhaps whilst there would be other economies that would be caught up in a Turkish issue, it's not likely to have truly lasting effects for the broader complex. It might look for support from those states specifically.
Okay, and I mean, what you touched on, you've touched already on trade relations with Turkey, and you know, the tariff impact that's been imposed, and the sanctions that have been imposed. One story that continues to progressively deteriorate and seemingly not obviously interrupt markets or risk appetite is the US-China trade relations. Perhaps it is impacting, but it's not, like I said, it's not not startlingly obvious. I mean, that story just doesn't seem to be getting any better. There's more sanctions, more tariffs have been laid down, and there's no obvious signs of the important members of either side being going to sit around the table anytime soon. And it looks as though there's $200 billion worth of tariffs that the US wants to employ on Chinese, in part on Chinese imports, is coming down the pike. And therefore, there is this continues to ratchet further and further and become more acrimonious. And yet, like I said, markets not too phased. Can you give us some reassurance, or should the markets be more nervous?
Well, I think they are reasonably nervous. I mean, Chinese markets have certainly been weak, but they've probably discounted a high probability of further sanctions. Now it remains to be seen whether those sanctions end up coming. Both the US and China imposed further tariffs, mutual tariffs upon each other. And now I think the president, as far as we can tell, is sweating it out, hoping to see a very weak economy in China. And China is trying to use the minimum amount of additional leverage that it can in order to tide the economy over and effectively wait the president out until they can eventually come back together and reach some form of agreement. I think that's what the market's kind of looking for, assuming an agreement will come at some stage. But at the moment, the US is hoping that the longer it takes over this, then the stronger its position is likely to become.
So if people have returned over the summer, this week or past couple of weeks, or indeed next week, listening to this, and they've returned with a relatively neutral investment portfolio, what if we're adding that all together, is this a time to be, adding a little bit of risk, or really adding a lot of risk? Does this sort of the combination of these US economy looking in reasonable shape, and yet the sort of China, US-China trade relations sort of seeming no light at the end of the tunnel, and emerging market anxieties as a result of the dollar, is there a great argument to be applying a lot of risk at the moment?
I don't think so. I mean, I think staying the course with your current positioning, assuming you're reasonably invested, sort of makes sense. The obvious area to add to would be emerging markets. But as I say, in order to get to that position, you need to believe that this recovery in this sort of decline in the dollar that we're seeing at the moment can become something a bit more significant. Otherwise, it's a very, very short term term trade. I think we could see a bit more weakness for the dollar, which means there is some opportunity, but it doesn't feel like a sort of 3 month or a 6 month kind of position, but more a matter of weeks rather than months at the moment. Now, if you start to see signs that something like the concerns in Russia, in Turkey, or concerns about Chinese growth are impacting global growth, and that's going to, if that starts looking like it's going to affect something like central bank policy or the Federal Reserve policy, then you'd see a weaker dollar. And under those circumstances, you might look to emerging markets as an opportunity.
Okay, thanks very much, Guy. And thanks to our listeners. We hope you had an excellent summer, and hopefully this podcast has given you some sort of segue transition back into investment and working life. But do leave us any feedback on iTunes or SoundCloud. And until next time, many thanks for listening. Thank you.